morning. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Hope Is Now, a radio broadcast sponsored by The Respite, a center for grief and hope. My name is Mandy Epley, and I am your host for this show, as always. And I'm so excited today that Dr. Matt Lyon is with us. Good morning, Matt. Are you there?
I am. Good morning, everybody.
Hey there, Matt. So happy you're with us. So looking forward to speaking with you, dear friend, about your journey, your gifts, and your life of service. And as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime and co-founder of The Respite with me and with our dear friend, Elizabeth Therrien. But Cindy Bolero is with us today. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning.
So, Cindy, will you do the honors to introduce Matt to everyone that's with us today?
I am happy to, happy to. So I loved this line in Matt's bio that I'm going to read that says, Dr. Matt Lyon's passions are celebration, excellence, leadership, service, healing, parenting, spiritual and personal growth, and flourishing on every level. I love that. And Matt was originally trained as a chiropractor and acupuncturist, and he is an expert in network spinal analysis and somatic respiratory integration, which hopefully he'll tell us a little bit more about what that is. He has worked closely with Olympic athletes from three countries, members of the White House administration, and even Hollywood actors. We want to know more about that too, Matt. He is the owner of Network Wellness Center of Charlotte, which is a one-of-a-kind wellness center in Charlotte where we live, practicing the leading edge of mind-body health care. And we are very, very honored and excited to have Matt on our show today.
Yeah, welcome.
Great. I'm really
Thank
excited
you.
To be here too.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Well, for those of you that may be listening to Hope Is Now for the first time, I wanted to share with you a little bit about our show, and then we're going to launch into speaking with Dr. Matt Lyon. So I had this idea back late last summer of 2014 about how amazing and powerful it is to interview leaders, everyday people who are giving their lives in service. And what a powerful way it is to put bones and flesh, or flesh on the bones of the model of heart-centered grief that I have had the privilege and the honor to co-create with my dear friend and colleague, Chris Saadi. And the model of heart-centered grief is a seven-step process that moves people through loss in life in a way that's very empowering, in a way that is life-giving, encouraging, and gives practical tools around everyday loss. One of my great passions is to inform, encourage, inspire, teach, and help people who are grieving. And the reality is that for so many of us, we hear the word grief and we automatically think of death. And grief is integrated throughout our lives. And we experience so many losses throughout our human journey. And what's incredible is that those very losses are teaching us about our leadership, about our gifts, about our calling. And so it's been an amazing privilege this year to be speaking with leaders who are sharing their stories of heartbreak and how that catapulted them into the inspiration of their own callings. And today we're going to be speaking with Matt about step six of the model, which is service. And what an incredible experience it's been speaking with leaders around their individual stories of heartbreak and service. And my hope for you as you listen today, that you can listen in the context of your own story where you've experienced loss, whether that has been a relationship ended or a dream died, or you're struggling with very serious chronic health issues, or you've had someone that you love dearly die suddenly. There are so many losses that we experience in life, and we want to inspire and encourage you and help you find what is the message and the treasure for you that you're being taught about yourself, and how you then can use that wisdom to give back? Because that's what we really know it's all about, is giving back to this beautiful planet that is also really hurting. So welcome this morning, Matt. So glad you're with us today. So looking forward to hearing about your story. So there's this powerful question that I've had the privilege to be asking leaders in our community and around the U.S. And that question is, what, if you'll share with our listeners, what is one of the great heartbreaks in your life, and how has that led you into your own calling? And I recognize it's a very complicated question that can probably have a lot of different angles, but if you'll share with us, what is one of those heartbreaks, and how has that led you into your life of service?
You said this is deep radio, and you're not joking. This is great.
I'm not joking, my friend.
I love it. Yeah, and I'm just really privileged to even be able to have that conversation with you and this group of great people that you've been interviewing. And as you asked the question, the first thing I experienced was a small amount of terror. And then beneath the terror of, will I say something that's impactful, came a really truthful response from my heart, and that is the experience of exile. The experience of exile, because I could talk a lot about content of losses and heartbreaks in my life, but the meta theme, the meta narrative that weaves them all together was a sense of exile. And here's what I mean by that. So at various points in my life, and at one very critical crossroads point in my life, there was a profound sense of exile, rejection, and loss. And that informed two paradoxically synergistic forces in my life. And I'll describe more in detail what that is. But before I get to that, those two paradoxical forces in my life were profound devastation and grief that paradoxically cracked open my heart and unleashed a desire to connect with people and the divine in such a way that we could all feel like we came home. So one would not have existed without the other in my experience. There was kindling of a search for God. There was kindling for a search for union with the divine. But the grief was the spark, the exile was the gasoline that lit that fire. You know, for me, my parents are blessed souls. The people who I, you know, served as the entry point for me in this life are really blessed souls. And like a lot of parents, they had pretty profound limitations. My dad, who's a good friend of mine, and someone who I really respect and love deeply, when I was born, had already lost my sister. So I had a sister, and he had a daughter, and my daughter was killed in a really tragic car accident just before my birth. And before that, he had served two tours in Vietnam. And one of the things I know to be true, having worked with thousands of people, is that our experience of grief is not limited to our personal experience. For in fact, from my view, we are inextricably linked to each other. And there are lines of influence and energy in our family systems that are so profound. And, you know, of course, my mom lost her daughter and had her own experience of grief. And so we all did the best we could growing up. But there was a point where effectively at about the age of 14, homeless isn't the right word, but my father had parted ways to go live and work somewhere else. And my mother parted ways to go somewhere else. And I was left to sort of be, you know, raise myself and be alone at that time. So homeless isn't the right word, but exile is the right word. And what that happened on the back end of was, I grew up in a pretty small mountain town in the Northeast, and this was in the 1980s. So historically, Ronald Reagan was president. The energy of the Cold War was in full effect. And the consciousness of that area was not exactly attuned to inclusivity. and progressive, passionate, compassionate care for all beings, regardless of one's race or religion. So at that time, I was passionately engaged and enraged by the practice of apartheid in South Africa.
Yeah.
And so at that time, you know, the white leadership had put in this system of profound oppression in South Africa, and I was really, for some reason, driven by this one aspect of social activism, and I was very public about it. And what that did is it started to incur some resistance in my community, and then I started to write papers. And at this time, you know, I'm in the sixth or seventh grade, and I'm writing papers on apartheid, and I'm writing papers on more inclusive systems of democracy, and so on and so forth. And I had T-shirts that said Free South Africa. And what it did is it started to invite a lot of resistance. And then the resistance at that point came from being physically beaten a lot, being, physically threatened a lot, having basically any friend I had that basically said, hey, sayonara, buddy. So there was just a deep sense that if I lived life connected to my passion, it could possibly mean massive rejection. And then when I had the experience of, my parents having to do their own thing and me being left to effectively raise myself for a period of time, it was a really crushing blow at that time.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't trade it for anything. I wouldn't trade it for anything because, again, it started to birth the sacred fire of, my life path. Not that I'm perfect or have it all together by any stretch, but I hope that answers your question. Uh-huh. Those were sort of the elements and a little bit of the content, but the context is exile, for sure.
Wow, Matt. wow, my friend. And so I want to really thank you for your open-hearted, raw sharing. I so know that when we open our hearts and speak about our stories, that we immediately create that line that you were speaking about, that we are all interconnected. I mean, hearing human stories breaks something open inside of all of us. And there's so much to say about your story, Matt, and what I want to say to our friends and our listeners that are with us and that will listen and download this later is to be thinking about how, we have a choice how we formulate and view our lives, and that when great pain happens to us, when we're rejected, when we're exiled, when we're left, when we're abandoned, which are themes that we all can relate to, there's still a burning coal of fires within our heart, within our being, that says, and what can I do? And what can I do? I think one of the incredible saving graces for you, which I'm sure there were many, one of them is that fire in your belly that the divine gave you around social justice and that passion. I mean, that passion, seeing that you yourself were being exiled and then looking at South Africa and an entire people, indigenous people, were being exiled from their homeland for the, from where they had a right to be, which was their birthright, and how you identified that and how you spoke about that and how that passion grew in you and fueled you did bring a lot of suffering to you and brought even more tenacity to you. I really hear that. I really hear that it brought so much meaning in your life. While you yourself were experiencing being exiled by your family, by the pain and that was happening in your family. And I think you also, there's so much to say, but I also want to make sure that I say to our listeners that, what unresolved grief does, for your parents to have a tragic loss of your sister dying before you were born, and for your father to be in Vietnam for two tours, dear God, all of that unresolved grief and loss. And as you were saying, we all do the best we can. We all do the best we can, and it really says to me how important it is that we are teaching our clients that we're having dialogues with our peers and our colleagues, that we're teaching our children and the children in our lives about the responsibility to take care of one's grief, and that it's okay.
That's it.
It's okay if you're grieving.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's all right.
Yeah.
It's just a big old part of what it means to be human.
That's it. And when it's unspoken and unrecognized and unacknowledged, I really feel certain that it has a cellular, physical, energetic, psychological, psychic, spiritual effect on generation after generation after generation.
Yes.
And the amazing hope in that, though, is that any point along that generational line, all it really takes is for one person to become a tipping point that can sort of say yes to that initiation of grief and pain. And that sort of begins this epic journey of transformation. And I really feel, again, I don't have scientific proof for this, although there is some really interesting scientific work out there being done on these questions, but that ripples effects into the future and into the past and can set people free. And I've seen it firsthand in my own family, things that were stranger than fiction after myself and my wife Lynn and I had some powerful experiences healing our own grief, how it began to have ripple effects on my father and his now current wife. And it's just amazing how we are so inextricably interwoven, and how when one thread changes, it starts to vibrate and send new information and life into the whole matrix. So it's just very interesting stuff.
Yes, yes. I mean, I would love for you to share more with our listeners, you know, what you were saying about how, you know, you and Lynn doing your own grief work, what that opened up in your lives and what that opened up in your family.
Mm. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Well, the most important thing, at least this is just my uncontrived response to you, is that the grief work that Lynn and I did, and we probably did that in three or four different ways, I'd say, both intentionally and unintentionally. But nonetheless, we were working to repair and regenerate and make whole our own lives, our own hearts, our own bodies, that both us individually have been really impacted by grief. But then as a couple, you know, when you're really engaged in deep spiritual partnership, you share that. And we had a sense of responsibility, not guilt and not shame, but of responsibility, you know, as it says in one of my favorite books, for whom more has been given, more is expected, more is required. So we've been given all these gifts of awareness and acknowledgement and all this stuff, and we felt like, wow, I mean, this really has to be shared around us. But more importantly, you know, there comes a point, I think, in one spiritual journey that no matter how much work we've done, or no matter how many experiences of transcendental grace we might have experienced, and no matter the different states we may have, you know, arrived at or achieved, though that alone is not sufficient to heal the grief. The grief has to be met and loved on its own as it is, without escaping into spiritual platitudes, without escaping into transcending from all reality, without the spiritual heroine or the new age myths that go around that somehow grief is negative or dark or black. Right. None of those things. It's the crucible in which we really enter the epic journey. So there, I'll get off my soapbox and then just respond to you. We engaged in the ILC group with you and Chris Sade and Cindy Valaro and other great people. And I think that was a part of it, because that added a dimension of acknowledging our experience in a setting where we could be held accountable, but also be celebrated for who we were, and where grief all of a sudden took on a new meaning, where it was a catalyst for growth and something to be deeply appreciated. And in that appreciation and in its honoring and in its unabashed and very authentic sharing begins a very powerful healing process. That was one. Two was our work with our respective energy and psychology traditions. And one of the things I realized is that grief and the trauma of my early life had played such an impactful role on my body, and a very exaggerated hypervigilance response, a lot of anxiety, easy trips into so-called depression, a lot of physical pain that didn't match any diagnostic tests. And so what happened is I began to do some really deep and integral body work like I do at my practice. I was able to start experiencing it on a very subtle cellular and energetic level, and that just seemed to synergistically work so well with the work we were doing with the ILC. And the other work I did was with a couple great therapists who, I sat in their office for a couple of years and just had both the body awareness and the verbal awareness and the cognitive awareness to tell my story in a safe place without becoming identified with the story, and yet having the story form like this incredible narrative of how spirit had moved and worked in my life. And that's what birthed a lot of courage to keep moving forward in my life and to actually then embody the very virtues and characteristics that were lacking in my family's response to grief, that I could actually choose to respond from that, from grace, from love, from trust, from courage, from authenticity to honesty, and therefore create a whole new life, but in doing so have these ripple effects into both my community and my family. So it really, for us, there was a body approach to it. A body-centric approach, an awareness approach, so some sort of progressive meditation practices, not that get you to transcend out of your body, but rather to descend and fully incarnate in one's body with the full spectrum of our experience, from joy and bliss to the pain and anxiety and terror that can be there. And then also having an accountability group, and in that case it was the ILC at that time. And also a mentor who's knowledgeable in the ways and the movements of grief in my life, and that happened to be with a therapist that I worked with and still do work with, actually. Those sort of pillars were the table that I think created real transformation and awakened, I think, passion. And our friend Andrew Harvey has talked a lot about Rumi's expression of passion. Rumi has this amazing line that passion burns down every branch of exhaustion. Passion is the supreme elixir and renews all things, one of my favorite lines. And in St. Paul, and I don't mean to go, I say this with respect to all traditions, I love all traditions, but St. Paul said, and the descent, I'm paraphrasing, the descent of the spirit into a human being makes all things new. So there was this process of newness that's created, but it didn't transcend the pain. In fact, it took the pain, and that became celebration. That became celebration that didn't have to push the grief away. So I hope that answers your question.
On so many levels. I mean, I think you're giving our listeners such a real experience of, we approached our stories. Well, first and foremost, quite simply, that, modeling, I believe I'm worth it. My spirit is worth it. The spirit of the divine has deposited within my being and within the being of my lovely, wife, Lynn. We believed we were worth it. We were worth it individually. We were worth it as a couple. And so we gave ourselves permission to, throughout time and a journey that's continuing, to really tell our stories and to get support on the spiritual level and on the body level and cognitively. And I really appreciate being a therapist myself. You are speaking about the safety of telling your story and how all of those tools together with a community at the time, the ILC, how it all formulated in building you more and more this courage to live with a broader, more open, with passion burning you into exhaustion, allowing you to live wide open, going for service.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole thing about service, Matt, is that I say this a lot and I mean it with all my heart, is that I know from life experience and what I've witnessed in working, with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people And what I know is that there is not a technique or awakening tool or practice on its own that will move people in their journey through their grief. There's nothing that exists that is more effective or more powerful than service.
Mm-hmm.
We want to know that our stories matter, that we matter, that the pain that we witness and that has been inflicted in our lives and that we've experienced, that it wasn't for naught, you know, that it was not all in vain. And there's something about it's just fascinating to me how wise the divine is in that where my heartbreak lies is where my passion will be born. What I see your work about, our work at the Respite and many other leaders that we know, is that it's about empowering people within their bodies to have more fulfilled lives, of course, you know, within the depth of their soul, and also to help them give back, because nothing is going to help you, friends, like giving back. So I do want to preface it by saying, you know, when a woman walks in my office for the first time whose child has tragically suddenly died, in those first few sessions, I'm not speaking with her about, and what is she going to do for service? You know, that is not what we're doing in the beginning with people in the most vulnerable moments of what feels like hell. But what we are doing is we're saying, staying on your grief journey, doing your, you know, giving yourself permission to feel. Quite simply, when I say, you know, doing your grief journey means allowing yourself to feel your feelings, not numbing out, getting support. And that as time goes by, what brings people so much help and so much soothing for those aches and those pains of the soul from their losses is giving back to others in service.
Yeah.
I mean, who better to serve the world and to serve, you know, our brothers and sisters on this planet than the brokenhearted? Who better?
Right.
The brokenhearted is who knows. So I'd love for you to share about, you know, your feelings and your thoughts about service, what service has meant to you. I think you are such a beautiful example of taking service so seriously.
God, well, I love what you said. I love everything you said so much that it
Thank you.
Blanked me out, and that's awesome. I love this because I'm a clear slate.
Yay!
For the real stuff to come through. Yeah, and one thing I just wanted to just really just say a big yes to was when you had talked about whenever any of us are in those initial stages of grief, that the power of telling the story in a safe environment and being seen is just so incredible. I mean, the power of empathy and compassion is so big.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so powerful. And yet, even within that is this amazing truth that the meaning that we give to any situation empowers us or disempowers us. It infuses us with energy and strength, and I'm not sure I like the word hope, but it infuses a sense of possibility even when everything is falling down and apart. It says, I am not alone. It says, there's something here, and I don't know what it is, but I'm willing to walk forward.
Yeah.
And at the same time, meaning can totally, and you dinged on this with such precision earlier on, is that the unresolved energy and unresolved grief, and then the meaning that forms from that can be extremely disempowering for one person in generations. So there's this powerful thing that happens when meaning is formed in an empowering way. One of my favorite examples of that is Viktor Frankl and his book, Man's Search for Meaning. And here's this man, this psychiatrist, who was put in a Nazi concentration camp. And from his time there, developed, if I'm not mistaken, logotherapy.
Yes,
which is really the
right.
art and craft of looking at our grief and then developing a meaning from it that was empowering. And
yes.
empowering, and that use of the right use of power and the infusion of power then can like make like a jigsaw puzzle, like an amazing puzzle master can take the most complex jigsaw puzzle and something is formed out of it that was actually greater than before. And
yes.
I think that's incredible. And then, you know, I think what, so service completely, radically shifts meaning. And it shifts
yes.
it in a way that's bigger than anything I could come up with on my own. So
yes.
I want to say that. And the other thing that I think service does on a real practical level is it attunes focus. You know, wherever our attention goes is where energy flows. That's what I love to say in my work. Wherever my attention goes is where energy flows. Now, this is
mm-hmm.
not the pop psychology statement of focus on the quote-unquote positive, think positive, quote-unquote, all that stuff. This says that I will be fully present in my experience. I will avoid
yes.
nothing. And I will get whatever resources around me I need so that I don't need to avoid anything. And when I feel like I have to avoid or I won't survive, I'll reach out to somebody else. I'll pray, I will meditate, I will find resources, I will keep throwing my lifelines out. But service then attenuates focus in such a way that creates momentum and progress.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've noticed is that all it takes for a human being to feel inspired is to feel a little bit of progress, is to feel
yes.
a little bit of progress. And learned helplessness comes from not feeling any progress and from feeling consistently exiled. So I just wanted to kind of bring that up in a
mm-hmm.
broader sense of the power of shifting our meaning
yeah.
and the power of focus. So for me, what I realized as I went through my own process, and I'll weave this piece of service into it, that really early on, you know, when I went through that experience, and I don't think I know that this did not come from me. This came from a power greater than myself. And I say that with respect
mm-hmm.
to everybody in this call and to all traditions and no traditions. But there was a thread of grace running through my life because I know myself. I'm
right.
not quite bright enough to get this one.
That, right.
That somehow beneath the rubble of my life, there was a spiritual solution. And that there was a bigger hand at work, and that actually these experiences of pain and loss were the paint colors that the divine was going to use to paint a new picture. And
beautiful.
I knew that I couldn't do it on my own. So really early on, I turned to different support networks for help. And I'm so
yeah.
grateful that one of the first networks I found myself in gave me a safe place to be myself and tell my story. And then they said, your freedom is going to come from your connection to divine source and from giving
mm-hmm.
your gift to the world and
mm-hmm.
from being fully present with your experience and knowing it may be bigger than you to handle. And that's a really good place to be because that put me in the place of surrender, and surrender creates a portal of
yes.
love that blows everything away
mm-hmm.
and makes all things new. So it was kind of like embedded in me really early on, right around age 16, right when I started this journey intensely, that service was one of the three pillars. It was that community,
yeah,
service, and surrender would be the three
yeah.
pillars of the
mm-hmm.
stool that would take
wow.
grief and form it into something more than just grief. It would be grief embodied in divine love. So that was it. And so right when I was 16, I then started, you know, one thing leads to another, and we say yes to life. We don't have to know what's on the other side, and I didn't have to figure it all out. I just kept saying yes to this process, and somehow this man heard of my story and started inviting me to speak at different high schools in the state where I grew up. So
wow.
In my junior and senior year of high school, I would get in a car and either drive or somebody would drive me, and I would go stand in front of an auditorium full of high school students, and I would tell my story.
Wow.
And it was like, yeah, it was crazy because I didn't have any public speaking training at all. And the only tool I had before I went on would be to go to the bathroom, hopefully lock the door, although I happened to walk in on a couple times. I would literally hit my knees and I would say the same prayer then that I said before I got on this call today. And that prayer was, Divine Spirit, whether there's one person here or 1,000, use me so that your energy of love can flow through and touch someone. That's it. Just give me the words to help one person today.
Amen.
Thank you. Amen. And then I would go, and I say that again with respect to all traditions. And so what that did is it started to plug me in, because people would come up afterwards. This was like way pre-email. So I would get like cryptic messages through different people, or people would come up to me afterwards and say, oh, my God, your story touched me so much. I didn't have the same things, but this is what happened to me. And these are kids that are 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old. Teachers would come up, you know, so I was starting to engage that. And here's what service also did, is even though I could not cognize this at that time in my life, it was plugging me into the ineffable reality that we are one. And that's such an easy thing to say. It's such an easy thing to say, but the truth is, my grief is no separate from the grief that Chris Sade experienced in Lebanon. It is no separate from the grief that's being felt this very moment in Nepal. It's no separate from the grief that the mom who lost her son in a tragic accident. That actually we are waves in an ocean of humanity, and that one piece of grief is our grief. So that I actually had to dive into this ocean, and the avoidance of it was going to cut me off from the amazing possibilities that grace could do and the full spectrum of human experience, which included a lot of joy, which includes a lot of separation. I mean, celebration and some sense of separation.
Yeah.
So that's what service did, and that became, and it's so early on, like it just like stamped on my forehead where God was like, and this is how, you know, I relate to the divine, fool, listen, I got you. You got everything it takes, and you're not smart enough to figure this out on your own, so find good people. And the other thing service does is it really anchors me into the fact that I don't need to go find the divine in some sacred place or some sacred text or some sacred person, although these things are great. There's no holier spot on earth than the person sitting next to me, on my left, on my right, you. But this is sacred ground, and that I would experience God's healing grace through each other and through vulnerability and through telling the story. And again, it has this incredible amplification effect of creating the real leadership, which is to transmit positive influence in the world.
Yes.
And while owning the full spectrum of our humanity with all of its lacks and faults. So that's me, service. And I'll share one more story if that's okay. Do you want me to pause?
Please do. Please do.
You know, and it's what I love is that the journey never ends. The journey never ends. It's so beautiful. There's this Tibetan mantra that when I heard it a few years ago, it like reached into my heart and it touched something inside of me. And the mantra is Gate Gate Padagate Padasamgate Bodhi Swaha. And I heard it on this Deva Pramal CD, and I was like, why does that make me feel so good when I hear this song? I mean, I don't speak that language, obviously. and I was so touched by it. So I Googled it. Google's like the amazing oracle these days, right? You can Google anything. And what I got was the most beautiful, like, explanation that basically said, hey, look, this mantra means more. There's always more. It's always expanding. There's never an end to the enlightenment. Wow, isn't that amazing? I'm putting some of my own artistic touch on that, but that's more or less what the mantra means. It's just the journey never ends. And there's always new levels of expansion and descension into humanity and ascension into spirit, and then the horizontal movement of that and love. Because that's the only thing that matters, ultimately, is love. Yeah. And grief is like a crazy, amazing way to totally expand my capacity to love myself and others. So about a year ago, I started to go through a lot of changes. And although, you know, my life up until this point has been, you know, amazing and awesome and filled with so much growth and success in a lot of different ways, and grief and loss, really full, I got to a point where I was like, man, who I was even 5 years ago doesn't exist anymore. And if that's the case, who am I? I started to feel really disoriented and destabilized and decentered. And I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, I think that this was another piece of grace, just on a different, I mean, grief and grace on a different level.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, I harnessed into my three pillars, surrender, service, and community. And
yeah,
I'm in this movement in my life where, you know, my felt perceived sense of the divine working in my life felt very arid. It felt very dry. You know, some of my previous go-tos for feeling good weren't I won't say they weren't working, but it just started to feel really different.
Mm.
And St. John of the Cross, the great Spanish mystic, who was St. Teresa of Avila's confessor, and St. Teresa of Avila is one of my favorite people of all time, wrote
mm-hmm.
a really great treatise when he was in prison about that sense that we go through when all of our previous perceptions of God or of life begin to change and be pulled away, and he called it the dark night of the soul. And for me, I don't know if it was a full-on bona fide dark night of the soul, but what was happening was my previous layers of identity were being stripped and pulled away, especially the aspects of my identity that I had formed to stay safe and to feel okay when the grief was overwhelming. After having done all this grief work, I realized, well, I don't need those anymore, but who am I without them? And that's where the fear is.
Yes.
Does that
talk
make
about
sense?
Scary. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about scary.
Yeah. And, like, not... And although I have a language to discuss that with people like you and other folks, that's not a conversation we generally have in our culture all the time. That never.
No shit. That's right. That's not the conversation at the local cocktail party. Thank God that there are people that we can have those dialogues with, or we would not remain sane, my friend.
That's it. And, you know, that's why, like, one of my missions is to just be weird. My mission is to be weird.
Good.
And
I'm going to join
you. Weird is like, I love people unconditionally. Well, no, let me say this. I love people's souls unconditionally. Some people have a hard time liking, but you know what I'll tell you?
Yeah.
I love people so much that I don't want to settle for the cultural norm of just staying numb, because I don't think, I know I can't survive doing that. I really won't positively impact anybody. And our world's not, in my opinion, is not going to, quote-unquote, make it, whatever that means, if we don't change the tides on this collective heroine of materialism, and even in the spiritual worlds, of spiritual checking out to avoid our real experience. So I will be weird.
Right.
And anybody at any time can talk to me about what's going on. Okay, so having said that, so I'm going through this experience, and I was about to fly to Italy, and I shared this. You and I were at that celebratory event with Chris Sade, and I shared a brief version of the story, and I'll share a very brief version of it now. In the midst of this new connection to, you know, my own grief, I was headed to Italy, to Lake Como, which, if you haven't been to Lake Como, it's just like this magical spot, and I was going to be staying at this really nice hotel. And it's always funny to me because, you know, here I was at 14 living on my own, like learning to cook hamburgers, small enough to hamburgers, and wondering where my next meal was going to come from. And I had to hitchhike to and from places of work. You know, so it's kind of funny to me that I'm getting on the plane going to do this, and people actually call me Dr. Matt. But it still trips me out. Like, what?
Right.
Do you know the whole story? Do you want to know the whole story? So I get on the plane, and curiously, before I got on that plane, I did this act of surrender, and this doesn't mean anyone needs to do this per se, but for me, getting on my knees is a profound physical gesture of saying, okay, I don't know the plan here, and I think I may have a plan, but you know what? I surrender my plan to the greater good. Oh, and by the way, I'm still feeling pretty itchy and like off-center, so, you know, if there's any guidance here. I'm an open channel. Thank you. Use me. Amen. Go on. So I'm on this airplane. And this was interesting, too. I was in the midst of, I'd been through a kind of an accident, and my arm was in so much physical pain and had been for several months. So I'm on the airplane heading to my first layover before I caught a plane to Italy. And I'm feeling pain in my body, pain in my heart, pain. And we have this saying in my practice that all pain is a force of love. Pain is an evolutionary force that is saying, stop, pay attention, do something different. And I'm sitting there thinking, God, this is inconvenient. I don't want to stop. I don't want to pay attention. And I don't want to do anything different. And plus, I don't want to disappoint anybody if this says what I think it's saying. So I'm feeling into my pain, feeling this pain. And all of a sudden, on the airplane, I start to cry. I start to cry. Tears are coming down my face. And I'm like, oh, this is great. You know, whatever. So I gave into it. I gave into it. And I closed my eyes. And I used a lot of the practices that have been taught to me. And I've taught other people. And I just let the pain speak to me. And I started writing. And then all of a sudden, I heard a voice. I felt a movement within inside of myself. And the information was this. You can't go to Italy. Don't go. That's not where you're supposed to be. You need to go be of service. And you know this. And I was like, I don't want to go be of service. And then I saw these like images of Mother Teresa. And then I felt a strong inclination that I needed to go be with the poorest of the poor. And then I flashed to a meeting I had a few years ago with a group in Jamaica called the Missionaries of the Poor. And they're not the same organization as Mother Teresa's organization, although there was some relation. And I got the clear hit that I needed to go to Kingston, Jamaica, and go spend time with the Missionaries of the Poor. Now, I'm on an airplane. I have all this stuff booked to Italy, and I'm like, this is crazy. You know, is this just a hallucination? Is this just spiritual self-importance? Is this hiding and running? And then I opened my journal I'd written, and then I opened to a different part, and this picture of Padre Pio fell out. And again, I say this with a lot of love and respect to all traditions, but Padre Pio was a really beautiful Italian saint that had this uncanny ability to appear in many places at the same time to bring people hope and love. And so he popped out of my journal. I never carry a picture of Padre Pio. And I was like, oh, shit. There's no escaping this one. So I'd never used the internet on the plane before. You can use the internet on an airplane. So I'm sitting there, and I get on the internet online, and I emailed Lynn, my wife, and I said, this is crazy, but I don't think I can go to Italy. I can't go. I don't know what it is. Something's pushing me to go to Kingston. I need to go work with the Missionaries of the Poor. And I'm thinking to myself, and you know Lynn, she is just so grounded. She's such an embodiment of love, and she's also a really good balance to my sort of wildfire passion side. She's the earth water. So I expected, hey, you know what? You're cool. Just go to Italy. God's wherever you go. You know, you're doing service work there too. And instead she wrote back, sounds good. You need to follow your heart. And I was like, oh, no. So one thing led to another. I emailed the brothers, a couple of the brothers on the airplane, got a couple responses back, talked to them when I got to Miami, had to make a really split-second decision of whether I was going to go or not. It wasn't totally guaranteed. I was, quote-unquote, in. They have a really rigorous process to let volunteers in, and I hadn't gone through their evaluation.
Right.
So I said, you know, F it. And I got on the plane, and I said, okay, Spirit, you're in charge here. I give this to you, and I give this to you for your healing, my healing, and for the good of the world. Just use this. And I'm scared. Did I mention that? I'm really scared. Did I mention that?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's something about stepping past that zone of comfort and that zone of certainty into the world of service and surrender that ignites intelligence that I could never create myself. I did end up in Jamaica. One monk actually threw me out the first night because he said, you didn't go through our evaluation. You have to leave. To which I said, do you know that it's 12 o'clock midnight? We're in one of the most dangerous cities in the world and one of the most dangerous neighborhoods, and you're telling me I have to leave? And he's like, yeah, pretty much. Find a hotel. And I was like, wow, this is really interesting. I won't tell you the whole conversation, but there was definitely words exchanged and biblical references made on my part, all of which did nothing. Because, you know, he was serving his perfect role. That just because we think we make these right spiritual choices doesn't mean we're not going to be met with resistance, whether internal or external. And, in fact, that's often like the very fuel that's required to really crack through. And so one thing led to another. I'd gotten the approval from the main guy. They invited me back the next day. They apologized profusely, and I went about service in Kingston with these guys. you know, from picking maggots out of open wounds to working in an orphanage with kids who just don't get any love or touch. And I'll tell you, here's the gift of service was, I thought I was going there to serve them. And what I got was a message of love from them to me, that we are one. And although there is a whole myriad of expressions of divine in life, that my grief was sacred, their grief was sacred, and it brought us together in real communion. You know, it didn't take a wafer put on my tongue to show me communion. It took that connection person to person in a rough place and in a tough place. And paradoxically, these guys who own so much grief, man, their capacity for celebration and unconditional living and unconditional love blew me away. They gave me this great gift. My week there just like completely metamorphosized my life. And then there was like this whole new trajectory when I came back. So service is massive. So I hope, I know that was a little bit long-winded. And I hope I touched on the thread.
Oh, you snapped. I mean, my friend, I mean, you have completely blown me away and blown away everyone that will hear these words. I mean, the beauty of the story, and I, you know, I was secretly hoping that you would share the story. I didn't ask you to share it ahead of time because I wanted, I didn't want to manage it. You know, I didn't want to manage what would come through you. That's not mine to manage. It's you and the divine. And I'm so thrilled that you did. I'm thrilled beyond expression, my friend, because, you know, really there's something very deep in what you're saying. There's so much that you're saying, but there's a piece of it that I want to bring it to, down to a very simple point, and that is when you lost your way, as you were entering into this, you know, spiritual, as you've been moving through this spiritual and psychological transition and a bit of a crisis for yourself and trying to redefine, you know, without all these ways of defining myself, who am I? You know, that then going and being with the poor, being with the poorest, some of the poorest of the poor on the earth, and giving back, using your skills as a doctor, a physician, and your love, your open heart, you're willing to give, you know, that they, you know, you were going there to serve them, but they saved you. You know, a reintroducing and introducing you to yourself at a newer, deeper level, your own spirit and the divine moving through you. And so there's such a grand wisdom in, you know, when we are deeply hurting, whether it's from one event that has occurred or we're in a transition in life, that going and giving back of ourselves, that we will be met there by life. You know, we will be met there by the wisdom of life and be shown things and taught things about ourselves that we wouldn't be otherwise. And it's such a gorgeous story of, you know, that there's, you know, that really, I mean, the trip to Italy, that would have been fun and great and a lot of perks and a lot of networking and a lot of learning, but it would not have cut you open. And and it's the courage and the willingness to be cut open that we need.
That's it. And the grief was the enzyme. The grief was the catalyst.
Yeah.
And I think that's this overarching meta narrative of our whole conversation, that grief is a dimension of grace. And then the fullness of grace, there's this necessary curriculum. It's like this in the university of spirit, there's like this necessary, you know, classroom of grief that nobody likes the teacher.
And the thing that I see is we don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I mean, I'm counting myself as this grief expert, and I am. And I don't get to sit up one step. And that I'll be visited and revisited by the angel of grief again and again. And that is, as Meister Eckhart says, the terrible grace of God.
That's it.
Are we going to find that courage to let go of how we think life ought to be and trust that where we're being led and what we're seeking, you know, as we're being led is really our true, I mean, that's our true purpose. That's why we're here. We are here to give back in love.
Yeah, that's exactly
so
right.
So I want to say, in the few moments that we have left, you've shared, I want to tell you, speaking with you today is exactly why the divine put on my heart to start doing this Blog Talk Radio. Exactly.
Yeah.
Is to have open-hearted, humble, weird, audacious leaders that are willing to share their true, real, vulnerable stories as you're continuing on your own journey to inspire and help others while you're also learning. And I'm so deeply grateful you have shared one gem after another. I mean, I want to just tell you, I'm when we complete this call, our show today in a few moments, I will be saying to Cindy, my God, this is why we're doing this show. I mean, thank you, Matt, for showing up so openly and beautifully and just bringing all of you and the people that hear your words are so going to be moved around their own stories, and that's why we're doing it. It's to inspire people into the action of the beauty of their own stories and to really say, screw you, shame. You know, screw you, shame.
That's right.
I have every right to be fully human, and I am being guided on an incredible journey. So if you all want to learn more about Matt Lyon, we will have his information posted on the Respite Facebook page. You will also be able to find a link that Cindy will be posting in just a few moments at the end of the show. And if you would like to learn more about the seven steps of grief and hope, which are really the seven steps of joy, they're this one and the same, you can find that at therespite.org. We have a slider on the homepage that says Hope is Now. And there are seven sessions of Chris Saadi and I teaching you how to move through your grief journey in an empowered way that can bring you deep meaning, huge support, and great hope. So, Matt, any closing words you want to offer us today, my friend, please feel free to do.
Sure. Well, first, thanks. And secondly, Rumi, who's like one of my heroes and one of my great guides, especially in grief, I wanted to just share a couple of his words. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
It's going to take 20 seconds.
Perfect.
He has a poem called Zero Circle, which could be translated in what the F to do when you find yourself in the middle of a grief circle. He says, be helpless, dumbfounded, unable to say yes or no. Then a stretcher will come from grace to gather us up. We're too dull-eyed to see that beauty. If we say we can, we're lying. If we say no, we don't see it. That no is going to behead us and shut tight our window onto spirit. So let us rather not be sure of anything, totally beside ourselves, and only that, so miraculous beings come running to help. Crazed, lying in a zero circle, mute, we shall finally be saying with tremendous eloquence, lead us. When we have totally surrendered to that beauty, we shall be a mighty kindness. I think that sums it all up from me. I just wanted to share that with you and everyone else. And I love you and Cindy and everybody else who's inspired this call.
Thank you, my dear friend. Well, God bless you and your work. And thank you for your time today. Everyone, please have an awesome weekend full of love, full of self-care. And we really appreciate this opportunity to share all of this information with you. And if you'd like to learn more about us, remember, you can find us at therespite.org. Everybody have a great weekend, and we'll see you next time. Take good care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.